You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
Well, this would be cool. Kind of fun, I think. Bozeman native Karen Gibson. Well, make that General Karen Gibson. Make that Senate Sergeant at Arms, General Karen Gibson, to join us today. Talk about her recent confirmation as Chief Law Enforcement Officer for the U.S. Senate. We'll also talk about how security measures have been stepped up in the aftermath of the January 6th riots there. Also, a recent assault that claimed the life of a U.S. Capitol Police officer. So that's on tap. And also, later on, Lewis and Clark County Sheriff Leo Dutton. He's Vice President of the Western States Sheriff's Association. Be alongside to discuss how the emergency situation at the U.S. southern border may be impacting law enforcement here in Montana. That today on Voices.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio. From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, F is for friends who do stuff together, and U is for you and me. It's Tom Schultz. N is for anywhere and anytime at all down here in the Deep Blue Sea. It's National Fun Day, Mr. Schultz. Yes, F-U-N, fun.
Okay, Josh, I was going a totally different way with that one. Yeah, thank you so much.
It's National Fun Day. I would never do anything bad.
Excellent and fun in-studio engineer Josh Rath. And thank you for being here. 22 years, two decades strong, working on three. That is from Montana, Voices of Montana. Today, as I said a bit later on, Sheriff Leo Dutton's going to join us. And this guy's got a long history in law enforcement. He goes back to 1984 when he started his law enforcement career. He became sheriff of Lewis and Clark County in 2008. A lot of things to do. You got to have quite a skill set if you're going to be sheriff in Lewis and Clark County. And Leo does. Sheriff Leo Dutton has them. We've heard Senator Steve Daines speak about the influence of Mexican drugs growing and the drug cartel growing in the region, establishing footholds in areas like Montana, where they previously only transported these dangerous drugs into our state. And so, in other words, I think they're, instead of just shipping drugs here, they're starting to set up shop here. And how much of that is related? Now, this goes back for a long time, okay? Certainly before the recent situation we have on the southern border. But we are hearing how that problem is being magnified, our drugs across Montana. And so we'll hear from Sheriff Leo Dutton, who's Vice President of the Western States Sheriff's Association, that a bit later on. But it's a pleasure to welcome Bozeman native General Karen Gibson, the new Senate Sergeant at Arms. Good morning, General Gibson. How are you doing?
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good. I hope you had a nice Easter, ma'am.
Oh, it was gorgeous. Yes, thank you.
Beautiful. Nice here as well. Grew up in Montana. I'm sorry you missed it. It really was a sweet day yesterday. Tell us about your experiences growing up in the Bozeman area, hunting, fishing, hiking. You did what a lot of us Montanans do there, right?
Yes, absolutely. I have been a Bozeman native since 1968. You get to keep your residency when you join the military. Wherever they assign you around the world, you can change or retain your residency, and I remained a Bozeman resident. In fact, I'm building a house there just south of town on some land I bought in 1993. My parents still live there, so I still very much consider myself a Bozeman girl.
Oh, cool.
In fact, you mentioned Senator Steve Daines. I grew up about 300 yards from Steve. He was 2 years ahead of me in high school. That was back when Bozeman was a small town,
yeah,
and you kind of knew everybody. Things have certainly changed.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. And doing that, why did you keep residency here? It's obviously,
I felt a very strong connection and still do. I was stationed all over the world in a lot of different states, Alaska, Hawaii, Florida, every state from Florida to Maryland. And I just never found anywhere else that I identified with in the same way. I think, growing up in Montana just instills certain values that I took pride in. And it was always an area that I intended to return to. You mentioned the hiking, the fishing, the hunting. just really, again, back when I was growing up, it was much smaller. There weren't nearly as many people. Now, you know, you go out in the woods and you run into folks, you know.
Right.
But back then, when it was a little less populated, just loved the outdoor experience and the kind of straight shooting, what you see is what you get sort of Montana persona.
There weren't, maybe I'm mistaken about that, but when you were growing up, maybe, like you said, in the late 60s and into the 70s, it wasn't as well established that women were avid hunters. I think more today we see that. Did you feel that back then?
Yeah, well, I would say I was not an avid hunter. I was forced to go by my dad. I took hunter safety to get my youth conservation license when I was about 12. And, you know, probably because I was the oldest, he started dragging me around hunting with him. And,
yeah,
you know, it was one of those things that, you know, when you're a child, you moan about it, but you appreciate it later. And I can tell you, because my dad was pretty hardcore, still is, that I used to say there was little I did in the military that was as physically demanding as going hunting with my father, who was, you know, it wasn't like the hunting they do down in the Southeast, say, with deer stands or anything like that. I mean, it was, we would go way up into the backcountry looking for elk, say. We might ski in, cross-country ski in for about 5 miles and stash our skis and walk around. We might be on snowshoes. But it was very physically demanding, and I complained about it a lot. But it certainly was a kind of grit and rigor and a love of the outdoors that stood me in good stead when I joined the Army, particularly because I started out, my first duty station was in Alaska.
Oh, my gosh. That, you know, that's a cool story because I think a lot of people can identify with that story as well. And you're right. Things have changed to a certain degree. General Karen Gibson is with us. She's the U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms, talking about her, you know, childhood in Montana, grew up there, went to school there, and then headed off with an ROT scholarship to Purdue. I'm curious about, you talked about some of the values that you've learned in Montana, experienced them not only hunting, but in other areas. And then you went off to Purdue University. Congratulations on that. I mean, that's quite a step for somebody back then, the small town of Bozeman, Montana.
Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to be an engineer. I loved math and science. I did get an engineering degree. But I went to summer school one summer at MSU, and I could leave my parents' house at 12:56 on a bicycle to make my 1 o'clock class. And then I would chain up my bicycle in the bike rack below the window of my father's office. When you're 18 and you desperately want to leave home and live on your own, that is not the kind of college environment I was looking for. And my dad said, you know, if you want to go to school out of state, you better find a way to pay for it. And this ROTC deal sounded like a pretty good gig. You know, they'll pay for all your college, and in 4 years, you'll do 4 years in the Army. And, you know, to be quite honest, at age 18, my idea of long range planning didn't extend much beyond what am I doing this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reality of the fact that this, of what military service was going to mean, didn't really sink in for me until I was about 40 miles from Fort Huachuca, my first duty station. And then I thought, wow, this is real. What have I gotten into? This had better work out. And fortunately for me, it did. I had no intentions of making the military a career. I thought, well, you know, I don't really know what I want to do with my life, so this would be 4 years to figure it out. And it turned out that I just fell in love with being a soldier and have never found anything else that I would rather be or do. And so I stayed in the Army for 33 years. It was the most incredibly challenging and rewarding career that I could think of.
And the Army over that time, too, it's like anything in America. We transition and we change and we grow. And, you know, you've held some pretty prestigious positions there, General Gibson, including Director of Intelligence for Combined Joint Task Force. Also Director of Intelligence for United States Central Command, combat veteran, intelligence operations in many counties and countries. And I wanted to mention that Iraq, Afghanistan, Korea, East Africa, and the United States. So thank you for that service. What would you what would you say to a young person who's considering maybe following the path that led you into the military?
Yeah, I would say, number one, go for it. I my daughter joined the Army, and she was in the Army for 6 years. And I always said, you don't need to make this a career. But I think we owe, as citizens, some kind of commitment to our nation. And it doesn't have to be military service, but we owe something to our communities and society. And if you serve in our armed forces, even if it's just for 4 years, you can hold your head high for the rest of your life and say, I stepped up and did a little something more. Yeah. I have served my nation. And so, you know, I would encourage it from that regard. The benefits are outstanding. Again, you don't have to make it a career, but I've had, you can imagine, 33 years, you know, you have freakish medical things that occur. I never had to pay for any of it. The Army paid for, let's see, 4 bachelor degrees in my family, my husband and 2 kids, and 2 master's degrees. It was a good life. I got to see much of the world, and, you know, it's not necessarily for the faint of heart. One of the reasons I stayed in, one of the things that attracted me so much, is that military service challenged every facet of my being, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, being a leader, being called on to do physically difficult things, being called on to do intellectually challenging things. Nobody likes to play tic-tac-toe. It's just too boring because it's easy. I think we're attracted to things that are challenging, and it was both a challenge and a tremendous reward. So I would tell young folks, to strongly consider it.
And accept those challenges. General Karen Gibson with us, U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms. So, and maybe this is too vague a question, but as you said, you got to see much of the world. What do you make of it? What do you make of the world?
It's complicated. And we are interrelated. I think anyone who thinks that what happens in other countries doesn't matter to us, need only look at the pandemic, you know, how people getting too close to an animal with a disease in, you know, let's assume it was a wet market in Wuhan, that within 6 weeks could have the impact it had on our economy and our way of life. Or, you know, look at the Ever Given that just got stuck in the Suez Canal and the impact that is going to have on manufacturing. So to think that, we only need to worry about what's happening within our own borders. I know you're going to talk about what's happening south of the border here in the rest of this show, that it's a complicated, interrelated world. What happens in other nations impacts us, and we should be that's not advocating for intervention or military intervention in other nations,
right.
But we need to pay attention to it. And, you know, frankly, I know there's, I don't want to turn this into a political thing, but, you know, it's not just the military. It's also about diplomacy and aid and development. And those are kind of the three legs of the stool. And we need to consider for our national security policy, how we use those three legs of the stool to safeguard what happens in our borders and our way of life. And pay attention to what's happening elsewhere.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, too. And I think things, as you said, it's always been complicated. It's always been interrelated, but even more so nowadays because of communication, I think. General Karen Gibson is with us, U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms, Bozeman native. We'll come on back after a short break here and talk about what the Sergeant of Arms does in the U.S. Senate. She's not making a coffee. Back with more from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Lewis and Clark County Sheriff Leo Dutton's going to join us just a bit. Vice President of the Western States Sheriff's Association will talk about how the situation on the southern border may be affecting states in Montana and across the West. 2 full weeks on the job officially for General Karen Gibson, a Bozeman native and just recently named the U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms. I sure appreciate your time here, General Gibson, and your service, and thanks for chatting with us. I know there's probably more stories we could talk about in growing up because Montanans, it's quite a value to us, I think, to grow up in Montana. But you're now the U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms. What is that position?
Yeah, so the Sergeant at Arms is a position that goes all the way back to 1789, almost as old as the U.S. Army. So 242 years, and I am the 42nd Sergeant at Arms. So the original position, I am the Chief Law Enforcement Officer for the Senate. So you enforce the rules. And originally, they needed a Sergeant at Arms to compel congressmen to stay and do their job, because you couldn't have a quorum unless they were all there. So I have the power to arrest. And in fact, when the Senate impeaches someone, whether it's a federal judge or a president, the Sergeant at Arms delivers, the impeachment articles and is the arresting official. And that position has grown, particularly since 9/11, to include security of the Senate and its members. And so we also, that extends to 400 and some district offices around the United States, to the senators themselves and their staff, and the physical complex here, which is, of course, centered at the Capitol building, but it includes Senate office buildings and other things. And I'm responsible for what we call continuity of government. For the Senate side of the legislative branch, if something were to happen, and we reconstitute the government somewhere, we're responsible for ensuring that the legislature is able to function, regardless of any natural disaster or, attack, say, by, Russia, China, anyone on Washington, D.C. And it's extended even today to include cybersecurity, which is, a daily fight. Two other key roles. So it's law enforcement and security, but I'm also the protocol officer. So when the president or any head of state visits the Capitol, if we have a funeral for a former senator or a president and they're lying in state, I am in charge of protocol for the building. And then finally, I'm the executive officer for the Senate. So all the stuff that allows the legislators to do their jobs, everything, glamorous things like custodial support, parking, ID cards, but also the media galleries, C-SPAN, photography, printing, just all the nuts and bolts of daily operations at the U.S. Senate.
A lot of traditions involved in that. A lot of things have changed over the years, too. Things will probably or have changed since January 6th. General Gibson, what was your reaction to January 6th? And how has that maybe changed not just what the U.S. Senate Sergeant at Arms does, but what all of the governing body does in that complex?
Yeah. Well, I was aghast. I was appalled. I was here in Washington, D.C. at the time, actually, across the river at the Pentagon that afternoon. And I learned, as I had driven through the district in the morning, I had seen people walking to the mall. I had seen the buildup of people there. And then I had business in the Pentagon in the afternoon. And it was as I was leaving that I heard about it on the radio. And then, of course, when I got home, could see it playing out on television. And I was aghast. I was appalled. And I was very, very angry. I've taken an oath now 33 plus years. I took it again in this position to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And as frustrated as I've often been with lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, I never thought I would see American citizens physically attacking and attempting to disrupt a constitutional process. I've served you mentioned a few of the places, Iraq, Afghanistan, several African nations, where they have military coups or dysfunctional governments. And I always took pride in the fact that these kind of things never happen in my nation. And that the people I worked with in multinational coalitions looked up to us as a beacon of freedom and secure and stable government. And so I was very, very angry. When I heard that the House of Representatives was, had asked a retired general to look at security improvements, I thought, okay, that's good. And about 10 days later, someone sent me an email. They said General Honoré, who led that review, is looking for some retired intel colonels to maybe flesh out his team. Can you help out with names? because I was an intelligence professional in the U.S. Army. Mm-hmm. And I slept on it in the morning. I said, well, what about me? I mean, I'm not a retired colonel. I'd been a three-star general, but I've got the skill set you're looking for. I'm right here in the local area, so there's no travel involved. I'm available to do this, and I want to help. And it was as part of that review that the Senate majority leader reached out to me and said, you know, everybody had been fired, both sergeants at arms on January 7th. So they were looking for someone new. And he said, would you be interested in this position? I wasn't looking for a job. My resume was not out there. I was happily self-employed, you know, doing little things on the side. Mm-hmm. But, you know, part of my philosophy is you don't get to complain about things unless you're willing to be part of the solution. And here I am trying to make things better. How could I say no? And so, unfortunately, it delays my return to Bozeman, to the house that I've been dreaming of for, you know, 30 years. But I am proud to and grateful for the opportunity to serve the nation again in what I think is a very critical position at a pivotal time in our national history. The Capitol remains a target, has been a target, you know, since 9/11. You know, the flight that went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania was probably headed for the Capitol. Mm-hmm. So to continue securing the building and ensuring the functioning, I bear no responsibility for the political positions anyone takes here,
yeah,
or the laws, but to making sure that they are able to do what they need to do. I'm proud to continue to do that.
Yeah, well said. And I appreciate that, too, because the job has changed dramatically, I think, just in the past few months. And of course, we see the pictures of the fences and the walls, barricades, whatever you want. It's not the picture that we have in our minds about our U.S. government. I don't know if that ever changes, but what's the balance of maybe trying to get back to that and still having advanced security measures?
You hit the exact right word is balance. Balance and risk management, not risk prevention. Mm-hmm. You know, we can never prevent all, you know, but risk management and balance. And I can tell you that the 3-mile fence with the razor wire came down on the weekend of March 20th and 21st. Mm-hmm. And we now, so traffic can flow as it used to on Constitution or Independence Avenues. And it's a smaller fence without razor wire just around the physical compound. It is also no longer patrolled with, you know, National Guard every 10 feet. At least from an image perspective, it's much more open. We need to get back to where I desperately want to get back to where school groups can come in here. It is such a beautiful building,
yeah,
full of so much history that I have so much pride in as our system of government. You know, again, as frustrating as I might get with the way the positions lawmakers may take, I take pride in our system of government. And I want school kids to come back. I want tourists to come back, not just Americans, but from around the world, to marvel in what is really the center of American democracy. And so we've got to enhance security in ways that will allow us to do that. And I believe it's possible, but it's going to take time and it is going to take some money, you know, to create some of those additional security things. You may not know this, but after 9/11, you know, we put in what is essentially an anti-tank barrier all the way around the Capitol, but you can't see it. I mean, it doesn't look like an anti-tank barrier. That's the kind of security fixes that we need to put in place here are things that still leave the building open to the people that it serves while enhancing the security and ensuring that the function here is safeguarded and protected.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it is possible, and I appreciate your directing toward that. So prayers and best wishes. Montana will wait. Montana has been patient. It's a patient state, and so we look forward to your return here, too, and best wishes for your family as well, General Karen Gibson. Take care, okay? I'm serious. We'll be
Thank you, Tom.
We'll be praying for you. I know it's an important job.
All right.